Welcome back. It's Maryland Morning. I'm Tom Hall. Baltimore City is embarking on an ambitious $74 million plan to tear down row homes in derelict and vacant blocks and neighborhoods. It's estimated that the city has upwards of 16,000 vacants. Today, we want to get some context for these plans, what policies and practices make eliminating blight successful for city economies and the people who live in those cities, and what locks communities out of economic growth and change. Alan Malik joins me in the studio. He's a city planner, a writer, and senior fellow with the Center for Community Progress. While a senior fellow at the Metropolitan Policy Program at the Brookings Institution, Mr. Malik wrote a study which looked at best practices for demolition around the country. He was the director of housing and economic development in Trenton, New Jersey for 9 years. He's written several books, and he is working currently with Baltimore City to evaluate the Vacants to Value program. Mr. Malik, thank you for your time. Good morning.
Oh, happy to be here.
So what are some of the demolition strategies that have been employed in other cities, and what have they accomplished, especially when they're done on kind of the large scale that we're talking about here in Baltimore?
Well, I think what's been happening recent years is people in cities like Baltimore, Detroit, Cleveland are realizing that they just have far more houses than they can realistically hope to put back into use in the foreseeable future, and that they just simply can't hold them there, that while they sit there vacant and abandoned, they're really doing harm to the neighborhoods. Demolition has really become a strategy to try to manage the urban environment and eliminate blight. And so cities are really looking at where should we be demolishing? Where should we be trying to preserve some of these houses and rehabilitate them? How do we reduce the excess supply that we have? And how do we do it in a way that actually makes the neighborhoods better instead of further undermining them?
Because large-scale demolition is not without risk, is it?
It's very problematic. I mean, if you just start knocking down houses without some idea of where you're going from there, you could actually undermine the fabric of a neighborhood. You can obviously are incurring a lot of costs, which have to come from somewheres. You may be involved in relocating or displacing families, so I think Baltimore is trying to minimize that. So demolition is not a painless process.
Of course, it's also costly in a lot of different ways to have a high number of vacants in the city. As you study it, what are the things that we perhaps don't always think about as a
Well, that's the thing that people don't, exactly, they don't appreciate, that every time when you have a vacant and abandoned property sitting there, it's doing huge harm to the city. It's costing the city a lot of money in terms of additional police costs and code enforcement and fire. It's a magnet for crime and for dumping and for fires. It's costing the neighbors a lot. It reduces their property values. If you have a house that's sitting right next to a vacant, abandoned house, that could mean a difference of anything from 10 to 20% or more in the value of your house. It also reduces people's confidence in the neighborhood, their feeling of comfort, whether they can just walk along the street and the sidewalk or not. So these houses are devastating in their impact.
On 88.1, it's Maryland Morning. I'm Tom Hall. Alan Malik joins me. He's a city planner and scholar. He's studying the Vacants to Values program here in the city of Baltimore. So, Alan, how do you turn an empty lot into an asset?
The first thing you have to do is make sure that it doesn't just become a piece of dirt that people are going to dump on and trash. So the simplest thing, and Philadelphia has really done a beautiful job in this, and I know Baltimore is working in the same directions, is simply to just green it and make sure that after the demolition is finished, somebody comes in, puts grass or sod down, maybe plants a couple of small trees, puts a nice simple fence around it. One of the amazing things we've learned is that if you do just that, which isn't very expensive and very complicated, people will start to see it as something that people care about and are not going to trash it the way they would if it were just dirt left sitting there. So that's a short-term thing. Then you've got to look at, really it goes back to, what is the market and what are the options in this area? You know, cities don't have a lot of money of their own to build houses or shopping centers or anything. So it really depends on, is the market strong enough so that developers are likely to be able to build and come in there either without any public money or with the government simply sort of filling the gap but not actually having to pay for it? Because that's realistically, the government simply doesn't have that much money. So what that means, and it's very difficult, is that some areas in a city could see those lots redeveloped with new housing. Other areas may not. At that point, what you've got to say, if you're not able to redevelop it with housing, how can you turn it into an asset? And this is where people look at what they're calling green solutions. Can you make it into a community garden? Can you make it into a park? Can you make it into ball fields? Can you make it into something that becomes an amenity for the community, either visually, in terms of it looks nice and people feel good being around it, or in terms of something that they can actually use, like a ball field or a garden?
You know, as I read your study, it occurs to me that, you know, as you said, there's this, there's a lot more houses that we have in our city in Baltimore than we need. I mean, Baltimore was at one point a city of 1 million people. Now we're 600,000 people. We simply don't need all those houses. So I would imagine that in most cases, it doesn't make sense to build new houses on these lots because we've already got enough houses.
Well, yes and no. In some cases it does, and in some cases it doesn't. But you got to start with the basic principle that the idea of demolishing houses is not simply about replacing them with more houses. But if you look at some parts of Baltimore are growing. Mm-hmm. You know, a few weeks ago I was over in the Oliver section talking to developers who are rehabbing
there. There's a lot of work going on over there in Oliver,
And they're finding that there are lots of people who want to live in those houses.
And of course, this is the thing, and you talk about this in your report, that demolition is just one single step in the process. I mean, you're studying what's going on here in Baltimore. You've studied what's gone on in cities across the country. Does it appear to you that we have, in fact, a comprehensive plan that includes demolition and then addresses the consequences, both good and bad, that follow that demolition?
I think Baltimore is moving very well in that direction. I'm not quite ready to say they're there, and I don't think they would say they're there either. But I think they're really thinking about these issues, and I think they're approaching these questions very differently than some cities, whom I won't mention, who just see, let's knock it down and hope for the best. Baltimore is looking at greening strategies. They've got a lot of effort going on in the planning department to tie together all the different greening ideas that are going on. I think the people in housing and community development are really trying to be strategic about where do you demolish, where do you rehab, where do you replace. So I think Baltimore is actually doing a better job, I think, than most cities in terms of thinking about what happens next.
Is there a city that, in your mind, serves as a paradigm, as a great example of a successful demolition strategy?
I don't know that there's a paradigm. As I said, I think Baltimore is doing some pretty good things and moving in some pretty good directions. I think Philadelphia is. Detroit is certainly ratcheting up the demolitions. I'm not sure.
They've got even more vacants than we do.
They've got far more vacants than Baltimore has. I mean, Detroit is off the charts in that respect.
The total number of vacant housing units in the United States, according to your report, is over 4.5 million. Okay. I mean, that's up 44% from just a few years ago. So this is a problem that's growing, not abating.
It is a problem that's growing. And it's a problem that, you know, we think of it sometimes as it's a problem that you only have in older cities that have lost population, like Detroit or Baltimore. But actually, you see it in neighborhoods in other cities that are still growing. You see it in small towns, rural areas. I've been doing some work in the Chicago area, and you go to the suburbs in South Cook County, south of Chicago, and these are post-war suburbs, and you see vacant boarded-up garden apartments and single-family houses in subdivisions. It's not just a big city problem.
How does a city like our city avoid the pitfall of placing too much emphasis on just demolition?
I think what Baltimore has to do is be very careful about constantly asking the question, what do we do next? What is going to happen to this property after we've demolished these houses, both what's going to happen to it immediately, so it doesn't become a question of just replacing one type of blight with another, but also what's our long-term plan? Is this a property that should be a park forever? Should we maybe make it into a park and then look at it again in 5 years? Is this an area where we can build something new? Is there something that the community needs and that we can afford in terms of a community center or a school? So the key thing is to be constantly thinking about what comes after the demolition so you don't just demolish and then have to fake it.
So talk about some of the other cities who have put together coalitions of different groups to enhance the process of demolition.
Yeah, this is a struggle pretty much everywhere. The basic principle is this really should not just be a matter of people in City Hall looking at maps and saying, this is next, then we go to this. You really should be talking to people in neighborhoods, talking to neighborhood organizations, community development corporations, historic preservation organizations, people who have a stake in the communities and are going to be impacted by whether you demolish or rehab or let the buildings just sit there. I'm not sure that any city does a great job, but I think Cleveland really works very closely with the city and the network of CDCs. They've got a citywide organization called Cleveland Neighborhood Progress that kind of coordinates a lot of the thinking on these issues. Philadelphia, the city has a partner with the Pennsylvania Horticultural Society, which really manages a lot of their greening and post-demolition efforts.
Our house is a very, very, very fine house.
Alan Malik is a senior fellow at the Center for Community Progress. We'll have a link to his study about demolition on our website, wypr.org/Maryland Morning. Coming up, what are the health effects on children and adults who live in neighborhoods where blight is prevalent? We'll have more on that after a break for news. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us.
The flowers in the vase that you bought.